Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. With me in the studio, once again, Deputy Police Chief Mitch Cunningham and New Hanover County NAACP President Deborah Dix Maxwell. We're talking about police tactics in light of the Ferguson, Missouri shooting and local protests over the use of force. If you have a question for the NAACP's Deborah Dix Maxwell or Deputy Police Chief Mitch Cunningham, we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. You can also tweet us using coastlinehqr. And right before we went to the break, Deborah Dix Maxwell, you were showing me a brochure that says the 411 on the 50, which is basically how to deal with the police under certain circumstances. Before you tell me about some of those circumstances, Deputy Chief Cunningham, what does that make you think that they actually have to put out a brochure to get through an encounter with officers?
Well, before I get to that, I just wanted to clear up a matter that was raised. Ms. Maxwell talked about the diversity in our department. We're approximately 16% African American, and I think it's close to 20% African American in the city. So I just wanted to show that there's a gap to be filled, but we're working hard with our training and recruiting to fill that. You know, the first thought I had when Deborah showed it said brochure is, ironically enough, the police department runs a similar program. Of course, I haven't read the brochure, so I'm not sure what it says. But our program is called Police 101, and we have been using that in our public housing partnerships. And so our officers are talking about, you know, myths about police work, and talking about some of the information that needs to be presented in public housing. And it's a really good partnership, and I think people are positively responding for it. Responding to it. So I'm interested to see how closely it mirrors this brochure.
Deborah Dix Maxwell, what are some of the pointers in that brochure? The 411 on the 50.
In your car, one, upon request, present your driver's license, registration, and proof of insurance. If you are suspected of drunk driving and refuse to take a sobriety test, the police may seize your driver's license. Three, if the police state they have probable cause, they may begin to search your car without your consent. Do not interfere, but clearly state your lack of consent. Five, if you are given a ticket, sign it. You can always fight the case in court later. And that's what to do in your car. Just simple tips to help people. Unfortunately, during this time in this country, we used to have a saying, DWB, driving while black, for our young brothers who, like my cousin, a doctor, who drives a luxury car, will be stopped. Unfortunately, in the light of Ferguson and other incidents around this country, for our brothers, it's LWB. We're concerned about them just living while black in this country.
You know, President Obama raised that same issue, talking about what it might be like if he had a son. And the fact, is this common, Deborah Dix Maxwell, that if you have a son and you're African American, you are going to have to teach that child how to navigate this country and law enforcement to stay alive?
At this time, it appears to be. You look at the statistics nationwide. It is not just a Wilmington problem. It is a national problem.
Deputy Chief Mitch Cunningham, there are some stereotypes that you referred to about officers. And, you know, there's the ever popular stereotype about someone goes into law enforcement because they're a control freak, or they have a thing about needing to exert authority. That's pretty widespread. Is that true? And are there people on the force that shouldn't be because they have psychological issues like that?
Well, I will tell you that to become a police officer, it's a very involved process. Obviously, there's psychological tests, polygraphs, background checks. So it's pretty involved. Now, that's not to say that there aren't folks that get on to the police department and then through their performance, we'll weed them out. But there's, you know, certainly there's misperceptions about police officers and their motivation for wanting to join our profession. I will tell you, in my experience, what I've been so impressed with is the quality of folks that we get. As you can well imagine, after 9/11, I think most police departments, police agencies saw a spike of applications, people wanting to serve their country. If they couldn't do it overseas, they were going to do it here in their own communities. And we're very proud and feel a deep sense of responsibility to prepare those folks for a long career and get them raise their level of professionalism. And that's Chief Evangelist is always very intent on making sure that folks have got training and is looking forward. What do we need next? What should we be doing? What are we learning about today that we need to be preparing for tomorrow?
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the balance between safe communities and citizens' rights. If you have a question for Deborah Dix Maxwell from the NAACP or Deputy Chief Mitch Cunningham from the Wilmington Police Department, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also send an email to coastline@whqr.org. And Amy from Hampstead, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air. Amy? And Amy is gone. We have John from Jacksonville. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Yes. I have a question for the Deputy Chief. Deputy Chief, I've seen instances where people were threatened by lions or tiger, or even I've seen a bear up a tree, and they use tranquilizing guns and that type of thing so they don't kill the animals. Why can't they do such a thing with humans?
Deputy Chief?
Sure. In the last 15, 20 years in our profession, there has been a very concerted effort to bring in what we call less than lethal force. So the electronic control measures that we have, which commonly known as tasers, is one example. OC spray is another example. More and more and better defensive tactics. We're improving all the time. We have organizations in our profession, PERF, IACP, and others, who continually look at ways to increase our ability to place people into custody without ever having to go to lethal force. That's always our last option, unfortunately.
John, thanks so much for your call. Earl from Wilmington actually called back, and he wanted to know why police don't stay within city limits. Is that an issue?
Are you talking about City of Wilmington police officers leaving?
I imagine that's what he's city limits? Asking, but he's not on the line. Yes. Do you know what he might be referring to?
I guess the way I would answer that question is, of course, we have police officers from the city who are working on city-county task forces. So it's possible that you could see a city officer outside of city limits working perhaps in narcotics, gangs, and vice versa. We have a significant amount of sheriff's deputies who are part of our task forces working inside the city.
Deborah Dix Maxwell from the NAACP, you've said before that there are incidents involving officers that go unreported, racial profiling incidents that go unreported. Complaints aren't filed because people are fearful of retribution. And you told a story about a teenage boy, taking his family's household trash to the curb, putting it out, and being detained while he was taking out the trash. Can you tell us about that and what your concern is along those lines?
My concern was it was getting dusk. He was taking the trash out of his yard to the curb like any teenager should do. A lot of them don't. And he was detained by his yard. It was maybe a month after or two after Smith, but that was unnecessary because it wasn't that part of town. He wasn't doing anything. His mother did not know what had happened. And he was fearful of telling her till much later. And this is where the trust evolves. This is a large family, so I'm sure that family told other families about this incident. But no, they did not wish to pursue this. And we have numerous calls from people who choose not to pursue because they are in fear of their economic livelihood or the fact that they have to live within the city limits and they will be scrutinized by patrols.
So you're saying, Deborah Dix Maxwell, just to be clear, that this wasn't an isolated incident, this wasn't an anomaly, this is something that happens frequently?
It's frequent enough. One time is too many in this era. We had an incident where someone's car was listed as being armed and dangerous on TV, and it could not be retracted until the police station retracted it. I'm thankful to our Father Almighty that nothing happened to that individual because they parked the car. But these are dangerous times. What if someone else had not known that in law enforcement?
Deputy Chief Maxwell, I mean, I'm sorry, sure. Mitch Cunningham.
Well, what I would ask is for people, if they do feel that our officers have taken measures that are unfair or don't make sense to them at that time, is to give us a call. What does happen, in fact, is, and of course, I don't know about the individual situation, but just in general, sometimes it's, very often it's helpful for a person like this to contact a supervisor after the matter has concluded, and then have the supervisor maybe explain what the officer was doing at that particular moment. In some cases, what we've even done is read information from CAD notes. In other words, every call, of course, is logged into our CAD system. And once a person learns why the officer responded in the way they have, often it's because of what the original complainant told them to expect when they got there. Now, of course, I'm not saying that that's what occurred in this situation, but it's surprising how helpful it can be after the incident is concluded for people to talk to each other and explain and maybe take apart some perceptions each one had.
We encourage that. That's the first thing we tell people. You need to go to the station and file a complaint, and they go, oh, no, I can't do that. And we have a legal redress form if we are to assist them, which they must complete. And they say, oh, no, I'm fearful of that. So that is our first recourse. We want them to talk with whoever's involved because otherwise that person won't know.
Right. And we do, too.
Deputy Chief Cunningham, can you understand why someone might be fearful about filing a complaint and might be fearful about a greater scrutiny or retribution from the force?
Absolutely, and that's part of that trust and that gap that programs like this is going to give us an opportunity to hopefully overcome. You know, I was talking to one of our lieutenants who oversees a public housing, and we were talking about what had been like in 2013 when there was such a spike of violence, and we were trying to put in measures into place and working with the community on problem solving. And she was telling me a story about an officer just walking through, I believe it was Creekwood, and a woman invited him in to share a birthday cake with her family and her son. And to us, that typified some real progress there. And that's the direction we're going to continue to head in.
Devanna from Rocky Point wants to know if she heard correctly that Wilmington is now majority-minority. And if so, why aren't there more minority police officers? I think the first part of that, no, that's not correct.
Correct.
We are majority white at this point.
Correct.
Is that? But you said the population is about 20%
African-American,
and we have about 16% of the police force is African-American.
That is correct.
What are some of the things that an African-American officer would understand from experience, from upbringing, that a white officer needs to be educated about?
Each culture has its own specific traits and mannerisms or things that occur. For us, it may be talking on the corner. If I'm standing at the corner of Ms. Ruth's store, your officer may just drive by and think, they're doing a drug deal. That's where I grew up. I might be talking with someone I hadn't seen in a while. You could go drive by 30 minutes later and I'd still be there, so I really look like I'm doing something. And it's just that's a summertime pastime, standing on the corner, sitting on the porch. There are just certain culturally specific things that we have to be aware of each group and diversity. One thing that showed a great model of community policing, there's a viral YouTube video showing a police officer trying to do a dance contest with some kids in the Midwest. He didn't win, but it just showed that he put forth the effort.
Hey, he was trying, right?
Yes.
Have you seen this video, Deputy Chief Cunningham?
I have not.
We'll have to post this on our website if we can find it. That's great. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the balance between safe communities and citizens' rights. If you have a question for Deputy Chief Mitch Cunningham or the NAACP's Deborah Dix Maxwell, give us a call at 910-343-1138. Peter from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Yes, ma'am. I have a question for Ms. Maxwell, and this is just a perception. Maybe I'm wrong, but the standards for the application of deadly force are that you are in fear of death or grievous bodily injury to yourself or a third party. And it seems to me, and I got this impression from the two callers also, the two previous callers, it seems to me that there's a prevailing attitude that law enforcement officers don't have that right, that they're held to some higher standard, and that when they're confronted with an armed suspect, they're supposed to beg, plead, and cajole that person into surrendering rather than using deadly force. And I just, I'm at a loss to understand that mindset, and I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks so much for your call, Pete. Deborah Dix Maxwell. Let me ask you this. Well, were you about to respond?
No,
because
go ahead.
I have a question about the Pizza Hut shooting that happened in Wilmington in October of last year. There were three suspects. There was a robbery going on. As I understand it, police watched through the window and saw suspects with what they thought were weapons, guns. And when the suspects came running out, two of them ran towards officers with weapons in their hands. And so, you know, not having been there, and there's so much about this that I don't know, and I recognize that, but this was the subject of some of the protests. And had I been in that circumstance, I don't know, I have no police training, but I imagine I would feel that my life was at risk. Should the officers not have fired in that circumstance?
I have not seen the video, and until I see that, I can only speculate about what occurred.
Sure.
I've been to the site. I've seen where the shots were all the way across the street. So
all the way across the street?
There was a store across the street in which had holes in their window, because it was Wellington, that Pizza Hut. If you look, that was a major intersection by a major business. From what I understand, there was undercover subterfuge within the bushes coming out, approaching young men who were athletic and running. I'm not defending them. I'm not defending the police. But until I see the footage.
But you're saying there are legitimate questions surrounding the officer shooting of those young men?
Yes. Well, but we also at that time asked for the city of Wilmington, along with New Hanover County, while we are on air, to create a citizens review board. And here we are in the ninth month of this year, and there has been no mention, with the exception of a comment made by City Councilman Earl Sheridan, about the implementation of this within this city, which would alleviate a lot of this. A grand jury is not made up of only registered voters, which we're trying to increase the African-American pool so that they will have the opportunity to become jurists. But until we reach that point.
So in a circumstance like this, if we'd had a citizens review board put together, then this would have come before that board.
And it would have quelled a lot of the issues and the rumblings that occurred, because that board could have come back and said, look, people, this is it. Because it would have been comprised of a diaspora of this community. It wouldn't be just black. It wouldn't be just white. It wouldn't be just upper class or middle class. Because there are a lot of people who have been involved in review boards across the country who live in this city who want to participate.
Well, I just wanted to make a point about the Pizza Hut. Obviously, it was investigated by the FBI. Obviously, all the evidence was presented before the grand jury, and the officers were cleared. This was a series of seven robberies that had occurred, and in at least one of the robberies, one of the victims was badly beaten. So the officers that were approaching the scene were aware of these circumstances as they were dealing with that situation. So I hear some music, so I think I'll curtail my remarks.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking about tensions between law enforcement and community members, especially in light of the Ferguson, Missouri shooting. Give us a call at 910-343-1138. We actually have a full bank of callers lit up, and we will take those calls when we come back from the break. You can also send an email to coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM.